La la la. La la la. La. Welcome to the chapter 2, volume 2, ATX recap, baby. I'm Kevin.
I'm Jimmy.
And we're the Gilmore guys. So, you know, I don't want to give away too much, but we are a little pressed for time.
Yeah, we are.
So let's just get into it. So the big headlining event of this festival and the build-up, what the build-up's been. Just to give a recap, because people, if they're listening to this way in the future, may not remember this. When this was first announced, it was Lauren Graham, Alexis Bledel, and Amy Sherman-Palladino reunited to talk about Gilmore Girls at ATX Festival.
In the same zip code.
And then a couple of weeks, actually, no, I think it was a couple months later, they added Kelly Bishop, blah, 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 da-da-da, da-da-da. And then as the weeks went on and the months went on, they kept adding more and more people until we got to where we were.
Right.
It was literally everyone in the cast except for...
Chris Eigman.
Actually, that's true. Everyone, and of course, except for Edward Herman. Melissa McCarthy and Sean Gunn. But everyone else, which is like kind of extraordinary.
Yeah.
So... here is, I mean, this is such a loaded thing to talk about because in a way, there's no way that this thing, this event could satisfy every part and portion of the fandom in some ways.
Right.
In other ways, it is the fulfillment just by the very notion of seeing these people together. When people were talking to us like, oh, what are you excited for? What are you excited for about the festival? What we kept saying was just seeing people together.
Right.
Boyhood, that movie, is so moving just because of the passage of time. And it's been less than 10 years since the show ended. But still, even after 8 years.
It's been eight years.
Just seeing everybody together and just seeing the passage of time and seeing Lauren and Kelly and Alexis and Amy, like, all sharing the stage now. As they are now, is kind of a moving thing. I think the panel, how did it strike you? So we go in there. It starts like 45 minutes late, essentially. They start by showing the theme song on the big screen. We all sing along. Ariel comes out, and then she introduces the festival, producers, Emily and Caitlin, and they come out, and then they introduce Jessica Shaw from Entertainment Weekly, who's the moderator for this event. And it starts with Amy, Alexis, Lauren, and Kelly. Just the three Gilmore Girls and the creator.
Right.
And they talk about everything. That's the first half. They show a tribute video to Edward Herman, which I didn't know until later Amy actually cut together.
Yes.
Now, Entertainment Weekly nor ATX Festival released that video because of like copyright stuff.
Yeah.
What I'm thinking about doing, it's been so long since the festival. I mean, it's still, we're recording this within the same month of the festival, but it feels like, doesn't it feel like a year ago?
Oh my God. When I had to think about that, I was like,
this
no,
is
it
June,
couldn't have been.
Yeah, we're still in
it
June
is,
as
yeah.
of recording this.
That's crazy.
It's cuckoo bananas. But I'm thinking.
It'll have been almost exactly a month when this is released. Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking. Based on a video, I think Chris actually took a video and sent it to us. I'm thinking about recutting the tribute.
You should change the music so it's see you again featuring Wiz Khalifa.
No, that'd be dumb.
It would be dumb.
But I'm thinking about cutting it and then putting it up. Just at, like, and still giving editing credit to Amy.
It's such a sweet video.
I tried to make it frame perfect because it was super well done. And the fact that she did it made it even 20 times better.
Yeah.
The reunion panel, I feel like, was trying to serve a lot of masters at the same time. And certainly the position of corralling 10-plus people, 15-plus people, almost 20 people on one stage is tough.
Yeah.
How would you rate, just on an objective scale, of someone who's a fan, who's seeing it, who's seen the panel, how do you think it went?
So when it comes to panels, there's always this weird atmosphere of having it be really a question and answer sort of deal where they just go down the line and answer questions. And that's always such a weird thing because it doesn't feel as natural as if it were just people having a conversation. But I think it went really well and everyone was sort of fluid and not too tense about the whole deal, which made it a lot more enjoyable to watch, and it wasn't just like, oh, I felt this way about it. I felt this way about it. And I thought the moderator did a pretty good job. So I really enjoyed the panel. I think it, I really enjoyed it. It moved really well. I think everyone involved was seeming to have a fun time. And the set decoration, I wish we could show you guys firsthand.
Set.
It was beautiful. So the way they brought the first, so they brought out Lauren, Alexis, Kelly, and Amy all out as one, and they were just sitting them in four random chairs up front with a chair for the moderator. Then when they started to bring out the rest of the cast, they opened up the stage or the curtains after playing the Edward Herman video, and they revealed this sort of Stars Hollow set of signs and chairs that were clearly from the show. Like, they had chairs from Emily's Place, from the Gilmore household,
from benches from Stars Hollow,
yes, signs from Stars Hollow, and everything. It was beautiful. It was really cool to see, and they had them just fill that, and I think that was the best way to do it, because you kind of get this sense that, like, they're back in the world, which was really cool to see. So I think that was a great surprise, and I'm glad that it was pulled off as well as it did, because it made it that much more fun. And it felt like a real fan thing. It didn't feel like fielding questions for the press. It felt like, look, these are people who loved this show and probably grew up with it, so we want to do something that feels special for them. And it was.
And I think, too, again, when it's so many people, it's hard for it to not become kind of a sterile environment.
Yeah.
But I think even, I remember one cast member was saying, oh, it's just going to be a photo op, and it'll be whatever, but it's just kind of a photo op. But then, after the experience, being really pleasantly surprised by how, like, warm it was, and how nutty it was, too, there was a fervor in the room. There is a, oh my gosh, I'm going to butcher his name, so I'm going to look it up right now. So, Todd Vanderwerf,
oh,
who, you know, he writes for AV Club sometimes, and for Vox.com. So he has a great article about the reunion that's definitely worth reading. But he said one of the big takeaways for this, and I 100% agree, and he says the headline is the single most important thing about the Gilmore Girls reunion. But he said the big takeaway is this is an event that is nostalgia for women, which is kind of unheard of. Has there ever been Comic-Con, or even, like, think about movie franchises and stuff, everything that's resurrected, or like a property that's resurrected that's based on comic books, toys, things, and obviously women enjoy these things too,
right?
But as a property that's so specifically for, by,
where the demographic is women,
is overwhelmingly stately. Like, the screams were girls, it wasn't men going yeah. I mean, there was us,
there was no Arsenio woos,
yeah. There's no Arsenio woos. But yeah, so I think that's such a good point. I don't even know if there's a property comparable to the notion of, like, resurrecting. I mean, I guess Sex and the City is kind of a franchise because there's two movies after it.
Right.
But it wasn't very good. I mean, I wouldn't categorize Sex and the City, certainly not the movies, as, like, oh, quality entertainment. But I think, like, here, you know, here's a quote from it. Here's a quote from Todd's article. The thing about Gilmore Girls is that it's specifically about the women who love it. Women who are young and college educated and affluent enough to attend a TV festival, and yes, usually white. It's about relationships between mothers and daughters, or grandmothers and granddaughters. And the men on the show are mostly there to be love interests or wise grandpas. It's not that men or others outside the core audience can't like the show. Indeed, it's one of my favorite TV shows ever made. But it gains that much more power when the viewer can look at, say, bookish, whip-smart teenager Rory Gilmore and say, hey, that's me up there. Nostalgia is never just nostalgia for the thing you loved. It's nostalgia for the person you were. The person who followed Rory and her mother, Lorelai, from high school to college while making similar moves. It's about celebrating what you loved and mourning the person you're not anymore. If a Gilmore Girls movie is ever made, chances are slim that it'll be any good. But the value of a reunion for the show is that it lets us live in a world, if only for a night, where the nostalgia factory isn't endlessly driven by the same seven or eight things, by the assumption that everyone who misses their childhood and adolescence is a man.
Right.
Isn't that an interesting point? I was just like, really, it's such a kind of simple insight, but I feel like it's very profound.
Yeah.
At the same time. There is, of course, so many highlights from the actual panel. One of our favorites, of course, is Scott Patterson.
Yes.
Giving us the Stars Hollow from the stage on a national platform with the stream and stuff.
Just pumping up this little podcast.
It's just fine because he did have to walk back a few things that he might have said.
Right. Which I don't, I mean, obviously.
Yeah, because it did. And people said, oh, did you know that it was going to, and we knew the moment he said it, like, oh, this will be like an E! News thing. They're going to say, Scott Patterson on Gilmore Girls, or they may not cite us.
Kevin,
I'm shocked anyone
Kevin
did.
Hit pause on the recorder and we ran around yelling, we're going to be rich!
We're famous!
No. Hearing any sort of news that there were developments in any way in our head was like, this is news because it's news to us. So.
Of course. And so there were great moments. What I loved about the panel, which I think it's hard to do and hard to facilitate a lot of times, is when it facilitated moments that weren't particularly insightful, but that weren't insightful in a knowledge sense, but in a behavior sense. So insightful in like, oh, that's how these guys interact together.
Right.
So like the guys at the beginning saying like, I'm Team Dean. Well, I'm Team Jess. And then high-fiving
yes,
and stuff.
That was great.
Like that sort of stuff. Or Liz Torres getting handsy with Matt Zuckery.
Or anytime Lauren and Amy interacted, there was a very, you could feel the Lorelai in both of them. Like the parts of Lorelai that were clearly from Amy's perspective and like the sharp, like quick-wittedness of it and the parts of Lorelai that were from Lauren's perspective, which is like this like great tenacity for responding in kind and figuring out like she just bounced well off of Amy's like talking, which was like it's clear from that her writing did not probably ever feel like something that she was trying to struggle through. It was just natural to her. That sort of typing, that sort of writing style of everything being like paragraphs and just being like this, the quickness is her. It's not her going, I want to make it quicker so I can fit more in. It's her going, this is how I speak. It's not.
Right. Which I think is actually, cause, and I'm beating a walking, talking horse here, but the parallels between her and Aaron Sorkin, I think one thing that is not a parallel at all is when you see Aaron Sorkin speak, you can tell the aspirational quality of his characters.
Right.
Not like he's a stupid guy or anything, but when he talks, he doesn't exactly sound like Josh Lyman. There's Sorkinisms in there,
yeah.
But it's not exactly a direct channeling of the energy that already exists in him. Whereas with Amy, it's kind of just channeling an energy. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Sorkin writes his characters up, and Amy writes her characters down, I would say. Like in the sense that,
or at least vertically, where it's like a lateral.
Something in me just felt like she writes her characters in a way that, like, she talks fast and she's smart, but at the same time, any character she writes, there are some characters who don't talk crazy fast. Mm-hmm. She writes the main four, I would say. That's the Gilmore Girls and even Luke in this sort of style of being like, yeah, yeah, that's how we talk. Yeah, yeah, blah, 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 blah. And that's her. That's vertical with her. But the townies and everyone else around her. Actually, Paris, too. You know what? I might be wrong. I would say vertically. Because I just start going like, you know what? Miss Patty as well. But she does write them
vertically.
Or is
it horizontal?
Horizontally. Getting, sorry.
Yeah, it is horizontal. No, I said vertically. That's my bad. But, and that's the thing. I've even thought, you know, years and years before we started this podcast, seeing a few video interviews with her and hearing some audio interviews, I always thought, you know, I always want more shows by her and more narrative shows and
definitely
stuff. But I always thought, if she had a podcast, I would listen to it every
week. Of course.
Of her just like, well, this thing happened, blah, 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 you know, and just going off on anything.
There's so many great showrunners that just listening to them talk is like listening to, it's just listening to a really good speaker, which is so weird because I feel like being a showrunner doesn't necessarily mean that you have to be great at talking as much as you have to be great at knowing what works on a page. But like her and Dan Harmon come to mind as people where it's like hearing them talk is like listening to a wise like 80-year-old man give you wisdom with the speaking manner and like coolness of someone on like that you would be best friends with. it's like a mentor who is like, it's like going to the Fonz and being like, Fonz, you got to tell us. And he just says one sentence. You're like, that makes total sense. Fence. I'm out. Wait, yeah. Where did you go? You're a ghost. It's so...
And I think that's a new sensation, too.
Yeah.
I think that's very 21st century. Who was the showrunner for Mary Tyler Moore? Who was the showrunner for MASH? We don't know those names. I mean, Larry Gelbart, I think, for MASH. But I...
Oh, I was going to say Norman Lear.
No, I mean, Norman Lear for All in the Family, but for the most part... So I guess maybe it did start in the 70s kind of with those shows.
But I wonder if those people had the same, like, speaking style and, like, that sort of orator.
I don't know.
Quality.
I mean, Norman Lear's known as kind of a personality, but he's more... No, as a behind-the-scenes guy, yeah. Whereas I think what we've seen in the last 20, 25 years, like, X-Files fans know Chris Carter. Mm-hmm. Community fans definitely know Dan Harmon.
The rise of the celebrity showrunner.
Yeah, Vince Gilligan, David Chase, Sorkin, all these guys. And, yeah, that's a new phenomenon. And it's so funny you're talking about, like, oh, hearing the wise man speak. Because that Coffee with Amy panel, the little interview she did, where the room was, like, 70-something people... And the energy around it was like the Sermon on the Mount, like people trying to get in,
yeah,
which is good and bad. I mean, Dan Harmon's made a podcast based on that sort of thing.
I would love for Amy Sherman Palladino to have her own Harmon
Town. Palladino Town?
Yeah, Palladinoville.
Hell yeah.
Oh my God.
Palladinoville. I mean, truly, I was just like, yeah, wonderful.
And if there were any way for podcasts to be like on the same level as television, that's what I'd want from her.
Really?
Yes.
What does that mean? On the same level as television?
In terms of...
pay?
Pay. No, wide reachingness and like the idea that an audience for a podcast can be as great as an audience for a TV show. Mm-hmm. And like the idea that like a service like Netflix could pop up for podcasts as a response to not having a great venue for it.
Right. Anyway. Yeah, and it's getting there. It's getting more...
I don't think it'll ever be there because...
It won't ever be there 100%, but right. I'm saying it's moving closer to that.
Yeah.
But of course, you still need millions of dollars from investors to just have the budget for 10 episodes, much less 22.
And visuals to keep the kids...
yep.
They can't. They need the audiovisual.
But you know what I mean? Like, I mean, yeah, it'll never be as open source as this. But with things like Amazon Prime and Netflix, we've gotten a little bit closer there. Because they're still gatekeepers, but the gates are smaller and easier to get through.
That's true.
I would say. Now, so the panel was good in a lot of parts. And a lot of some parts I thought were not as good as others. But again, it's an unenviable position to try to like corral and moderate that.
Oh, yeah.
You know. So
Q&A, just to quickly
Q&A say. Q&A got weird.
It got weird. Everyone had questions that were like... written deliverables, and they were multi-part questions.
Yeah, one girl got booed in the middle of hers.
Did
like
she?
It got, yeah.
Oh, that's
people
awful.
Were like, get off the... Yeah, people
that's
started...
That's terrible.
Yeah, it got a little catty. And then... But then it also recalls to my mind, have you ever seen an audience Q&A go 100% well?
No.
My answer was no until that weekend. The Bunheads panel, 100% good Q&A.
Really?
Every single person had a question that was relevant, insightful, and not weird. And I think maybe because of the nature of the festival, because it wasn't an industry town per se.
And also because how can you be a super fan of Bunheads?
Exactly. So, and I don't know if we've talked about this on the podcast before, but there's everyone, I think everyone who's a fan of Bunheads is a fan of Gilmore Girls. Not everyone who's a fan of Gilmore Girls is a fan of Bunheads.
Rectangles and squares.
Yeah. And I think in a lot of ways it did separate. I mean, it's taste, so it's not objective, but there's a lot of wheat and chaff. Separation there.
Right.
Because the reasons, if you like Gilmore Girls for a specific set of reasons, maybe it's because of the hot stable of WB boys, Pat Leckie and Milo and all that stuff. And maybe it was because of that specific mother-daughter relationship. But if you like some of the weirder aspects of the show, you know, and I don't even know, I'll talk about better when we do Bunhead Bros. But there, the crossover of elements of between Gilmore and Bunheads, it's like there's this big palette and then they funneled them down into these like pure elements and still applied them to like strong female leads, setting the Bechdel test on fire, interesting storytelling. And in a way, even my takeaway from the Bunheads was in some ways Bunheads was a technically more precise and better show just from the way they shot the dance sequences, which I'm sure we'll talk about. But anyway, it was a good panel. I think it did satisfy a lot of people's... wishes.
Absolutely.
As much as you can. But ever since then, and ever since that weekend, and just thinking about like the difference between good and great, because I think there is a difference between a good reunion panel and a great reunion panel.
Of course.
And I think it can be achieved. I don't even know if I've seen it that much, but I've been obsessed with the idea of like how to moderate well, how to interview well, how to get the best insight out of people well. Even when we do like Gilmore Gabs and stuff, and it is such an easier, like more intimate setting where you can just talk and have a conversation. I think a lot of times, like there's been a few For Your Consideration events here in town where there's panels from like Brooklyn Nine-Nine and Kimmy Schmidt and Mindy Project. And I've talked to, I didn't go to these personally, so this is a secondhand account, but people I've talked to, ooh, there's a plane.
We're getting arrested.
Yep. The people I've talked to who went to those, I said, how did it go? How was it? How did you enjoy it? And they said, it wasn't great. And I said, why? And they said, well, the moderator, like audience Q&A got weird.
Yeah.
And the moderator was just kind of about the whole thing.
Oftentimes, audience Q&A just seems like a moment for some people to go, like, I just want to talk to them.
Yeah.
Which is fine, but I feel like that's such a public venue that it can get awkward.
Totally. And so, you know, if we're ever in the position to like talk to people in a live setting, because sometimes I think there's a devaluing of that position. I think the ATX Festival was pretty good overall, but I think you could see at some festivals and some panels, like maybe those For Your Consideration panels, there's a devaluing of the position of moderator where it's like, oh, well, they're from this outlet, put them on. They'll probably do a good job. Whereas something like in print journalism is so different than the skill of corralling a stage, you know what I mean? And creating an experience for people, especially if one, they're buying like a $200 badge to be there and you're trying to provide an experience that money can't buy. You know what I mean? It's hard to serve all the masters, but I've just been so obsessed with it ever since ATX. Not like we could do better, but just like, what is that difference? What is that difference between good and great? How can we do that? How can we get better?
Honestly, I don't think we could have done that.
The reunion panel?
Yes.
I don't think so. I mean, I don't know. I don't think so is the correct answer. And then the shows obviously went well. By this point, you've heard both of them. Our experience with the Highball, that venue, could not have been better.
Right.
So I want to say thanks to John Smith and Dylan and Keith over at the Highball, who just did such a phenomenal job supporting us. Everything from our end was so smooth. They were so easy to deal with.
I don't know if I told you this, but later that night, I actually went back to the Highball just to do karaoke, just because I liked the venue so much.
You didn't tell me that.
No, yeah.
Because the Highball, in addition to being, it's a bar, and it's like a karaoke bar, essentially, but they also have that stage where you can do like live podcasts and shows like that. And they have live music there all the time. They do like live karaoke shows there, I think.
They were doing that when I went there.
Yeah, so our green room, quote-unquote, was actually this hilarious-looking circus-themed karaoke room.
Yes.
Which was so funny. And then just a quick note about 413, because you'll have heard it by now, and there's a part at the end where Keiko like gets the episodes mixed up. There was a moment the morning of the shows where guests we had booked, it was all kind of like there was a mess. We were scrambling to put everything together.
Yeah.
And I asked Keiko, I was like, oh, we may not have any guests for 413. Because I was looking like it was definitely a possibility at one point. And this is like an hour before the show or a couple hours before the show. I was like, could you do both shows? Do you have time? And she graciously said yes. And so for the first, for 413, she didn't watch all the way through. She just kind of skimmed.
Right.
So I just want to say that. And just as a testament to like Keiko's awesomeness, not like she needs any more character witnesses, but she's been so wonderful and such a lovely friend to both of us. And so she made that special, and I hope that like was really a special experience for the fans at ATX. We loved doing those shows. It was such a good experience for us, even though my voice was totally gone. And I was a nightmare afterwards, voice-wise, not like attitude-wise.
Kevin could not stop demanding Perrier.
I need my Perrier, but I was chugging this hot tea with honey in it. It was a bad situation. Because is there a worse time in the world to lose your voice before you have to do two shows back to back? 2 hour and a half shows.
Having to do three shows back to back.
Oh, you're right. But I guess it ended up working okay. Well, we'll find out when people stop listening. You know, I like Gilmore Guys, but then Kevin's voice sucked in those two episodes.
I'll never listen to them after those live shows that were different.
Never again.
Briefly, because I mean, we mentioned a lot of it during the shows, but we were lucky enough to attend the after party, and I'm not going to, like, linger on. Like, we made a lot of jokes about crab cakes and stuff. It was very cool to be there, but I don't want to linger on, like, how great it is to be at an event like that. But we, while being there, got a chance to sit down with Kelly Bishop and talk to her and Liz Torres very briefly in the most conversational of manners, and that was incredible. I wish that I could share that feeling with you guys, because we didn't have to say anything as soon as Liz Torres showed up. They talked to each other like the oldest of friends. They talked to each other, they shared stories, and we were just flies on the wall for this. And I honestly wish that we could have recorded that and released it. Just there was just such a comfort in them talking.
And a candor.
A candor.
That's when I talk about it in 416, but that's when, you know, they were talking about their favorite episodes, and there's just, such a fun easiness and familiarity to their relationship. And so, on that note, and the after party, that's also where Daniel Palladino put his arms around us and said, "So, Gilmore Guys, I was one of the original Gilmore Guys."
Which was great.
And he said, "You know, we like what you're doing, and we want to talk to you sometime," and blah, 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 blah. So that made us feel like, okay, good, they don't hate us.
Yes.
Everyone was so kind and lovely to us. Yeah. So quite the opposite.
But we got to talk to everybody, and everyone was so nice. Everyone was lovely. There was not any, like, sometimes you hear about, like, oh, we went to the after party, and that's when we learned that this person was a big old, there's no scoop here. Every person, like, we're not hiding anything and being like, this person's actually kind of
right.
A jackass.
And even, we kind of had a little after party, because we went out after the after party.
After party.
Where we went to Magnolia Cafe with a few
people.
Magnolia
Cafe.
And it was such a fun time. Just like, it's so surreal just being surrounded by those people. And just like, yeah, just being there until 2 in the morning. When did we check out of Magnolia Cafe?
About 2 in the morning.
It was like 2 in the morning, and you're surrounded by these people. And by the way, I want to point out, I was not screaming my lungs out the night before. Even at the reunion, I was like, ah, you know. Yeah. So my voice being gone, I wonder if it was related to the alcohol at all.
I think it was your throat going, oh my God, Kelly Bishop's here, Kelly Bishop, Kelly Bishop, Kelly Bishop's here.
So on that note, here's what I want to talk about. I talked to the queen. So the situation was Friday, and the woman who's coordinating press for the festival contacted us and said, oh, Kelly wants to talk to you guys. She specifically asked to talk to you guys.
Oh, man.
And at this point, Demi wasn't in town. So it was one of those things where it's like, well, I could talk to her by myself, but we want to wait for Demi. And so did Kelly. And around the same time, like I talked about in the last episode that I met Amy, I met Kelly. And she was so lovely because Gabriella, big stars, holla out to Gabriella and Bree for kind of preparing you the way. They had told her about us. And so when she got to ATX, she said, you know, I had heard about these Gilmore guys, and I've heard they're very funny, and I have to talk to the Gilmore guys, blah, 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 blah. So she, like, requested to talk to us. So upon the queen's request, we had to oblige. And the way it works with festivals, it's not, I think some festivals probably work differently, but for this one and for the talent, it's kind of a cattle call. You have 15 minutes with each outlet. There's a press person coordinating for the sake that everyone gets to talk to them that needs to. So, you know, Huffington Post and BuzzFeed can talk to them. So you get 15 minutes. And there's a person there saying, like, okay, you have 5 minutes left. You have 2 minutes left. Wrap it up. Okay, here's the next one. And the talent, these actors, these writers and directors, they're just there, just sitting in one place while this, you know, revolving door of reporters and journalists and, in our case, podcasters come by. And so we tried to schedule something earlier that day, but we weren't sure, and it ended up not working out. And so this was Friday afternoon. And then, you know, the press people were so nice about, like, trying to accommodate for us. And so Demi still wasn't in town, but they said, okay, Kelly can do 4 o'clock. It's 15 minutes long, but you can have 15 minutes and meet us on the patio of the hotel. So I go out there. I'm sweating because it's hella hot. Thankfully, they moved it to like a shaded area, but we were outside. And I got to do a little Gilmore Gap with her. And for me, and listening back to it, you'll hear, we didn't talk about Gilmore Girls a lot. We just kind of talked about her.
Yeah.
Because my goal isn't like, let me find the real Emily. Like,
right.
I just want to get a good sense of who this woman is and the woman behind this work that we've all enjoyed. And I did my best, and we'll see to what degree I succeeded or failed to, you know, keep my cool and just be a person and be present with her and be engaged and not to have an agenda that got ahead of like talking about it. Because obviously, just like the red carpet stuff, 15 minutes, not ideal. You want an hour, you want an hour and a half, you want the world. But I think we managed to have a fun, interesting conversation those 15 minutes. And before then, by the way, I had brought two XLR cables with my mics, and I found out one of them was shorting.
Mm.
So I had to, and this is when I really started sweating. That wasn't heat related. I was like, I'm about to talk to this person I've wanted to talk to for, you know, however many years, to say nothing of the podcast. But one of the cables is shorting, so I had to figure out how to hold my mic in a certain way so it wasn't like weird. And it did. It worked. There's no shorting. There's no audio issues with the actual interview. And you can hear the atmosphere of Austin, which is kind of nice. It's like a nice, relaxed atmosphere. And it was cooling down at that point. It was actually sprinkling a little bit, which was cool. So I now present to you what is hopefully the first of maybe two, or maybe the only, Gilmore Gab with Kelly Bishop. Welcome to Gilmore, guys. I'm Kevin Porter. I am without my co-host today, unfortunately. He's still on an airplane. He's coming and he's on the way, but there was an interview opportunity we just could not pass up, and we had to do it. So I'm going to introduce our guest right now. La la la, the special guest. Well, you may know her as Sheila from A Chorus Line. You may know her as Fanny Flowers, but you definitely know her as Emily Gilmore from the TV show Gilmore Girls. Ladies and gentlemen, it is Kelly Bishop.
Yeah. Ta-da! Ta-da! Yay! Yay!
You're here!
Yes!
Oh my gosh, what a miracle. Kelly, thank you so much for doing the show.
Oh, it's my pleasure. This I just learned about you guys. And
Good things, bad things?
When I talk, oh no, very good things. Especially, you know what I learned about you guys? I learned good things about me.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, we adore you on the show. What have people told you?
That's what I was told. I was out with my best friend seeing a play, and she said her daughter, who I think you have communication with these days, said, Kelly's got to find the Gilmore guys because they love Emily. And
we do.
I think they're going to be in Austin when she goes there. So I got that message. And so I actually even talked to the people when they were checking to make sure everything was cool. Me coming down, I said, yeah. And I know that there were a lot of interviews. And do you know anything about the Gilmore guys? And they said, yes. And I said, well, see if you can find them. They said, we will.
Oh, so, lovely. So we sought each other out.
Yeah. Well, I mean, as long as you're praising me, of course I love you.
Yeah. And we'll continue to do it. For as long as we podcast.
We'll be best friends forever.
Oh, well, I hope so. Yeah. I hope that's a promise. Well, let's talk about, I mean, this is kind of an extraordinary thing. When you start to do something, any artistic process, whether it's dancing or stage acting, you do it for the love of the work, but you don't assume probably that people will be talking about it 10, 20, 30 years later, 40 years, even in the case of A Chorus Line after the fact. And what is that feeling like?
Well, that's the joy of it, because you really do, like what I did for Love. You know, that was a great lyric that Ed Kleban wrote. You do it because you love the work. I, for instance, Chorus Line, and it was 1975. We actually did the tape sessions in 74. I wanted to get out of dancing, get into acting. Mm-hmm. And I saw that once I saw what Michael Bennett was doing with the workshop, and thank you very much. He was featuring me strongly in the show, which was very flattering, of course. I mean, wow, am I interesting or what? And I thought, here's my opportunity to act. I get to act. I get to use this time just to work like I'm in acting class. And, of course, I'm going to have to dance because it's about dancers and blah, blah, blah. Of course, rehearsing one, which is that the line, one singular sensation, which is like you're so close to so many people. And I'd stand there as I was learning it and think, and this is why I got out of the chorus. Get away from me. Get your arms off of me. So that when that became a phenomenal hit, and it was the biggest hit I've I mean, I think really is the biggest show still, just in terms of the enthusiasm and the terms of what it did for Broadway, what it did for New York. But that gave me the opportunity to be seen as an actress.
Yes, and what an iconic performance, too. A Tony Award-winning performance,
yeah,
even.
I mean, and who knew? I didn't think about that until it was nomination time.
Yeah.
I never crossed my mind an award. And then suddenly it was there, and I went, oh, yeah, oh, that'd be fun. And then because of that, especially on the West Coast, not so much New York, because New York, you know, everybody gets pigeonholed, but... I was known as a musical performer, mm-hmm. even though I ain't no singer. Anybody who knows me will tell you that. But on the West Coast, where all of the film and television was coming from, they just saw that she's an actress. Mm-hmm. So when Chorus Line became such a huge hit, I said, okay, there is my open door. Then now I'm going to walk through that door and be able to push away the musical part for a while, because I want them to understand that I'm an actress now. I'm not a dancer who acts or something like that. So I had all of that, and then things come along. I mean, you know, so much of this business is luck. So much, you do everything you can. You stay disciplined. You stay professional. You try to perfect your art or whatever. But it still comes down to luck, mm-hmm. most of the time. Right place, right time, right director, right actor, right. And I have been, without soaring success, I have been steadily working for all of these years and very grateful for it.
Is that something you envision doing even at that age? Like, I'm going to be doing this till I die? I don't care if they pay me or not.
Well, not whether they pay me or not. Anybody who knows that about me goes, don't mess with Kelly and money, ever.
All right, duly noted.
Oh, yeah, they know that. What I want to do, I love dancing. I think I actually always wanted to be an actress. Those were kind of my fantasies, were about being an actor. But I was studying dance. I was a really good dancer. I had great training. And my mother wanted me to be a ballerina, really. So I followed that. And I loved dancing because I was so good at it.
Mm-hmm.
And the life was wonderful for like 10 years. And I realized that I think every dancer understands, even if they don't explain it to you, that your career is going to be very short. You know, 35 is kind of like the best. That's where you pretty much should cut off.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought, I don't want to be an old chorus girl. I mean, they're sad to me. They're good. They're really professional, and they look good from a distance. But
it's not for you.
But they're 45 years old, and they're playing cheerleaders, and it's sad, you know. So I said, I want to get out, you know. So I gave myself 2 years to make the transition from dancer to actress, and somehow, here we go with luck again. Somehow, things came. I got this job. I got that job. Somebody else, you know, got that. And then there was a Chorus Line, and then there was like the rest of the world.
Of course, so, pretty dancing roles like
but
that.
But a lot of the acting part of it, the practical end of wanting to be an actress is yes. Then you can work for the rest of your life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because at some point, somebody's going to want an old lady. I'm waiting today. I don't know where they are, but I'm around. They'll find me.
I'll talk to some casting directors about that in
L.A. Tell them I'm good, and I'm very professional. I'm always on time, and I know my lines. Oh, yes.
Those are the two most important things.
They are. Don't bump into the furniture, right?
Of course. Is that the third?
I think, wasn't that Spencer Tracy who said that? No, learn your lines and don't bump into the furniture.
I think it is, yes. Mm-hmm. Oh, my gosh.
So, yeah, that was a lot of it, is that there aren't that many roles as you get older. Once, particularly for women, once you pass 50, you know, 55, then it starts to dwindle down. And it's simply because they don't write it. It's not because people can't do it. And then, you know, then every once in a while there's a Betty White. Maybe I can be Betty White. You know, and
you're the next Betty White, perhaps.
I don't think I'll live that long, tell you the truth, my darling, but yeah.
Oh, I think you will. But even speaking to that, and just the kind of lack of great roles for women over a certain age, it seems like in the past couple years, there's been a resurgence of that in television. I think we can look to Gilmore Girls as one of the big examples of that.
Gilmore Girls, it is television. And theater allows older women.
Mm-hmm.
Movies don't like older women. Movies just don't let older women come in unless they're like really, really old or something. And I go, hello, don't you all have grandmothers?
There's a whole middle people. Section that gets
yeah.
left
and
out
it's,
entirely.
It's all about who's writing it and who they think is relevant and who is relevant in their lives. And the people in their lives are like 30, mm-hmm. right? but they aren't important to me because I've been there and I had a really good time when I was 30. And I mean, I'm much more interesting person now that I'm much more than 30.
Right. You know? Do you enjoy that? Do you enjoy kind of like having that wisdom and gaining that from all those years of working and living?
I do.
Do you feel like you're like the best version of you now than you've ever been in a way?
I don't know if it's the best, but I'm comfortable with myself. Mm-hmm. I'm very comfortable with myself. I get confused sometimes because I don't think I'm as old as I am. Because I don't, you know, you always read that in books. The people, it was always somebody like E.B. White or somebody said, we all think we're 14. Mm-hmm. And we do. We're still 14 in our heads. Right. And then we look in the mirror and go, ooh, well, ow.
We think we're invincible. You know,
yeah. And just our enthusiasm, our youth, our interest is in that. That's what's going on in our minds. And then suddenly we realize we can't do it physically or whatever. I'll tell you one of the things I loved about my age group. Is the 60s and the 70s. Actually, the 70s were probably the best decade in the world ever. And at that, I was right at the perfect age where I could wear hot pants and cut off tops and go to the discotheque and do all that and look totally fabulous. And I look at cut off tops now and hip hugger jeans and go, well, that's nice, but darling, we did it first and there's no way you would catch me in those things. You would not. I don't even have a bathing suit.
How do you swim?
I don't swim.
Oh, no.
If I were going to swim, I would find a private pool and go skinny dipping.
Go do it,
But I threw away my bathing suits. The way I'd like to dress now to go into the water is like, you remember at the turn of the century when they had those black leggings and the little skirts?
Yes, of course.
That's what I would wear now.
Oh, like flapper gear.
Oh, yeah, I think
almost.
It would look really great on me.
Oh, that's amazing. Well, let's get that started. We'll get that trending on the internet.
Yeah, so if we can
a new clothing line,
at
Kelly
least
Bishop's.
We have Lycra instead of that heavy cotton or something.
Yes.
That'd be more comfortable.
Yeah, well, we're evolved now. Yeah, that's so, of course. Of course we would. Yeah. So, in looking back on that and just roles like, you know, Sheila in A Chorus Line and even Fanny Flowers and Bunheads. We saw the Bunheads panel today. We look back on all those amazing scenes and all those amazing characters and of course Gilmore, but those roles, like when you look back on your life and your work, what do you feel like you're most grateful for? What you're most grateful for when you consider those things?
And just I tell you, I am grateful to this day for being lucky enough to work. The very first job I had, unfortunately, it was just the worst thing for a ballet dancer because I was a ballet dancer and a really good one. And I had to take this job at Radio City Music Hall when they did have, that's when they were year-round, four shows a day.
You weren't a Rockette?
I was in the Corps de Ballet, darling, and no one ever knew there was a Corps de Ballet. I guess they thought that the Rockettes took off their tap shoes and put on point shoes and went out and did a ballet because nobody knew we were around, but there was a full, and that, I was getting paid for the first time in my life. Someone's paying me to dance.
Mm-hmm.
And throughout my, now I mentioned this earlier, I will tell you now through my 53 years in this business.
Yes.
I am so amazed. Not amazed because I totally deserve it, but I'm so
you heard it here first, yes.
To be paid. I go, that makes you a professional. Ooh, I'm a professional. And I've managed to make a really nice living being a professional, not being a big star. Never looked for that. Didn't particularly want that. I wanted to be a working actor. And I've been a working actor, and they pay me, and I still think it's exciting. I'm still stage struck. I'm still a starry-eyed kid. I know I look a little older than
I still see the starry eyes.
Do you see the starry eyes?
I do. Eyes? I can't not. It'd be tough, too.
Yeah.
Well, just to wrap it up, and thank you again so much for joining us. And
oh,
this
it's
has been
fun.
We've barely scratched the surface of anything Gilmore. We wrote a song for the show, Gilmore Girls, when we did our first live show. We're starting to do live stage shows where we talk about the show and talk about how wonderful you are. One of the lines we wrote was, we bow down to Emily because Bishop is queen. And that was a line I was very proud of that I wrote.
I love that line.
Yeah, it's fun. Have you ever heard that before?
No.
That kind of play on words?
That's beautiful. I love words.
Thank
That's
you.
Great.
Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Well, it remains true to this day. When people watch the show, I think what makes the show work and what is the glue and what makes the whole thing hold together is your performance as Emily Gilmore. I think that is the crux upon which the show rests. If you didn't buy the conflict between Lorelai and Emily, if you didn't buy the love that's clearly there, and if you didn't buy that Emily is a wonderful and beautiful person and there's just communication issues, then I think the show would fall flat on its face. So I think you held that show together. And we just are so grateful for that.
Well,
we thank you so much.
Aren't we grateful to me? Aren't I special?
Yes, you are.
I'm so special.
Yes.
And I didn't even write it. Isn't that amazing?
You were just saying the words. Oh, my gosh. Well, thank you so much, Kelly Bishop, for joining us.
Anytime anyone logs me, I love them.
Of course. And we'll see you next time on, or hear you next time on Gilmore Guys. Thank you so much. How do you think I did?
Not too hot.
Oh, no.
No.
We didn't actually listen to it just now because we're going to edit it in
later.
If
we did, I would have said, Kevin did great.
So here's what I want to talk about, and I don't need to get into too much detail. But the way it worked out, I was scheduled at 4 o'clock at a certain time, had 15 minutes, stayed under that time. I think the interview total was like 14. And it's an awkward setup. We don't have mic stands like we usually do. She has to hold her own mic. I'm holding mine. But I still think it was a good, genuine, nice conversation. I think it was good. For what it was, I think it went as well as I could have made it go. I don't know. Like, I don't want to live in regret or anything. But here's the thing that happened after the mic turned off is... we're out there, and I was actually the last one who was scheduled to talk to her. So she said, well, I don't think I have anything else right now. And we just kind of like started talking about something, and the press girl that was so lovely that was helping us out, I believe her name is Ashley. If it's not, then I'm a bad person. But she was kind of talking with us, and we were talking about Edward Herman stuff and things like that. And we kept talking. Press girl had to go to one of the red carpet things, and I was out there on the patio with Kelly talking for like an hour and a half, not about the show. I mean, some about the show, but some just about like family and talking about career, talking about winning the Tony and talking about what's on TV now and talking about technology and dogs and kids and marriage and blah, blah, blah. And we talked for a long time. I kept my cool, but it was an issue of like, I cannot break eye contact because she might leave. So I was more focused on this conversation than I have in maybe any other conversation in my life. And we were just there talking, and it was such a lovely, such a sweet time. And a part of me thinks, like, at first I thought, oh, I wish I was recording that. That could have been the show. Because she was so relaxed and candid and open and generous about what she was talking about. She wasn't talking to me like a member of the press.
Right.
She was talking to me like a guy, you know, just as a
just
person.
Just a chill dude.
Just a chill dude. Just Chill Bill, Volume 1. And it was so lovely. At one point, I think people discovered that she was on the patio. So there's like this little line to take pictures with her. And she was so gracious and lovely and obliged with everybody. But... so there was that, and then we wrapped things up, and at one point, like, it was just like this surreal thing, just walking through the hotel with her and talking with her, and she introduces me to Dennis Leary, who she worked with on a thing recently. I don't want to say what that is, because I think it's coming out soon, but she was telling me all about that experience.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And, yeah, it was just, that might have been... I mean, there were so many highs of the festival, but that might have been the height of the surrealism.
Highs of the highs.
It's just like, and it's not for the podcast. It's just two people talking who just happen to be, this is the context. The context
the podcast
is-
podcast of your life.
Exactly. I'm, you know, all conversations are podcasts that we don't record.
That's true.
What I always say. But
unreleased.
Yes, exactly. But it was just such this like- it was just such this like kind of cool moment. And I know we joke about like, oh, I'm obsessed with her. But really just kind of getting to connect. Like, because I feel like this show and even doing this podcast and what me and Demi, oh, Demi and I have tried to create doing this is some form of connection. We want to connect to the audience the way the audience has connected to this TV show and have connected to each other because of this TV show. That's what the podcast is about. That's what the live shows are about. That's what the reunion was about. It's just like it was a labor of love by all the cast and the crew that came, and Amy and Daniel and all those people. And just to take part of it, it was a surreal weekend. It'll probably never happen again, that sort of weekend where just kind of being surrounded in this real warmth that's not just Texas heat, but just like the warmth of people's affection for the show and the common ground that we all share is just like so was so lovely to be a part of, and everyone we met was so wonderful. Everyone we met that was the nicest person in the world that like knew the show or talked to us about the show. Everyone that we met at the live shows.
People, literally no bad eggs.
People made t-shirts for our shows with quotes from the podcast. Insane. Not from the TV show, the podcast. So just moments like that, sometimes you don't get to savor stuff. Like, I feel like for our first live show, for the St. Clair episode, we had a blast doing it, but I feel like personally I didn't get to, like, savor it and be like, wow, this is, like, an amazing thing that we're doing.
Yeah.
But thankfully there was enough space with the festival and with that weekend that we really got to, like, kind of savor the loveliness of it. And on that note, I don't know if we've talked about this off mic, but in terms of like, I guess we talked about it a little on the last Gill Mail, but in terms of like a reunion, like, oh, are they going to do a revival series? Are they going to do a movie? Are they going to wrap it up? Da, 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 da. I don't know if I want that.
I don't think so either.
I don't know if it happens, I'm not going to be like, oh no, but I'm not like really fiercely campaigning for it in a way that's desperate, because, and that may be unfair. And I think even some people on there have said like, well, of course you didn't, because you had that experience and you were at the festival and you were at the reunion.
Right.
And you had such like lovely and intimate, you know, connections with these people. But I don't know. I think what I was struck by with the Bunheads panel, which I talked about, is not, oh, as much as I miss Lorelai, Luke, Suki, Rory, Townies, I just miss that voice. I miss Amy Sherman Palladino's voice. Mm-hmm. And we want to see that come back.
And whatever, that's so much easier to bring back in a way that's not trying to, it doesn't have to hit any high marks of being like, it's got to be as good as the original. Yeah. It's good. The voice is there and it's good and it can do anything it wants to. But Gilmore Girls, bringing that back, it's like when they brought back Arrested Development. Like, yeah, it was good, but it's so hard to reach that because everything is so different now and we're in a different time and everyone's working on stuff. It's bringing it back to make it as good as the original would be rocket science. It would be this weird machination of making thing, of trying to fix everything to be the same and still be different enough that it fits a new audience, because you can't just do it for the same audience. You got to try and appeal new viewers as well. So, but yeah.
If it ever happens, great. But
if it ever happens, we're there.
But I think, in a way, the reunion, and of course, Demi hasn't seen the entirety of the show and the finale and stuff, but in a way, the reunion was kind of like, if this is the last word on it, that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if people experienced that even watching the panel on the air now on Entertainment Weekly, if they felt that same way, like, oh, this isn't if this is the coda and this is the last word on these characters and this is the last we get to see these humans interact, then that's okay. But that is my feeling. Like, I've made peace with it. It's almost like they're in the hospital. If they pass away, it's okay. I've made peace with it. You know what I mean?
Ready to meet the Reaper.
Yeah, exactly. Well, do not fear it.
Turn on the Pink Floyd and sail away.
I'm Blue Oyster Cult. Wait, Pink Floyd.
Just, I feel like it's a cliche to be like, I'm ready. And then like,
shine pink, on.
Some like Pink Floyd style, like lightness. And then just like, I want to listen to this as I pass away.
Yeah.
But
just to wrap it up, a big thank you to Emily Gibson and Caitlin McFarlane. From the festival for making it happen, coordinating with us for the live shows that we got to do, and allowing us to be a part of it as much as we were. And for whatever we're doing next year around that time that they're doing the festival again, we hope to work with them again, maybe do some sort of other show with them or attend in some other capacity or just attend, because it's a rad festival.
It really is. If you guys haven't been and you're anywhere near Austin or can get to there around the time, it's a wonderful time.
It's so rad. There was one moment, and I won't say who, but just like an example of the surreality of it. I was in an elevator, and it was me, someone that people know, and because I don't want to reflect poorly on them, like they're dumb or something.
Didn't you tweet about this, though?
No.
Yeah, you did.
Yes. Oh, yes, I did. Yeah. But I didn't say who it was.
Right.
Me, someone, and Brian Fuller, and the guy
Barack Obama.
Brian Fuller. It wasn't Barack Obama.
It wasn't?
No.
Oh, okay.
Sorry. It was Sasha. And Sasha turns to Brian Fuller and says, are you one of the Gilmore guys? And he's like, nope. Like, he was so cheery and pleasant. He was like, nope, wasn't me.
Shaggy. I would love for Brian Fuller to be like, oh, I wish.
Fingers crossed. Waiting for this day. Hannibal show to be over so yeah. I can podcast with him.
Waiting for Hannibal to be pushing daisies, if you know what I mean.
If you know what I'm saying. So thank you to Emily and Caitlin, and thank you to everyone that we met in Austin. And we hope to be back in Texas at some point because it is our home.
Yeehaw.
Yeehaw, mofos. But any other final thoughts?
Not really. No, I had a wonderful time. I had a wonderful time recapping it now, and
yeah, it's fun to relive it.
It really was. I feel like this is our clip show.
I mean, kind of, but it's clips that people haven't seen before or heard.
Have no fears; they've got stories for years.
La la la, ATX Festival. We did it. We came. We saw. We talked to people. Energy. Thanks to everyone that we met there, all the cast and crew.
Shout outs.
Festival people, the highball people. Yes. If you're in Austin or in Texas, go to the highball. Highball
it's
is
so
rad. So cool. Alamo Ritz, all those places. And we'll see you next time or hear you next time on Gilmore Guys.